What do Ronan O'Gara and Stephen Ferris think about the Lions squad announcement? Why is Sam Warburton's role as captain so important? And the guys tell us how Munster and Leinster can win this weekend. It's all coming up on The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
With fantastic support, half of Ireland were here. The rest of them are hopefully smiling at home.
We had a bet earlier in the year, €20, that if we won it, I wouldn't cry, but it's the best £20 I'll ever spend.
Here's Hayslip. Well, he picks it up quickly and off he goes. Drops it off to Hinshaw. Robbie Hinshaw scores it. Rugby history. Ireland beat the All Blacks for the first time.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of The Hard Yards, the Sports Rugby Podcast. I am Andy McGeady and with me in studio I have Ronan O'Gara and Stephen Ferris. Good morning, gents.
Morning.
Andy.
And joining us here is Sports Rugby reporter Pat McCarry.
Jared Payne.
Jared Payne, yeah. Somebody called Jared Payne's inclusion, I believe.
Well, I'm not going to talk about it too much, but I will talk about it a little bit, but we'll save that for a bit later on in the show.
We will. So what we have today, there's the reaction to Warren Gatland's 41-man Lions squad pick for the Tour of New Zealand, and we will also get into the two big games coming up this weekend, Munster Saracens and Claremont against Leinster. First, I was watching a bit of the Sports Joe live last night, and there was a great story about Andy Powell. Good lad to have on tour, likes his Big Macs. But
Golf carts and Big Macs.
But that is an interesting thing about Lions tours. You're thrown in together with players who you wouldn't know personally. Big characters. Are there any other players like that who you discovered a new side of, you thought, just lad, this is a decent lad?
I think you would know them probably a lot more than you would think. I think if you're playing in the Celtic League, you kind of come across the Welsh and the Scottish teams quite often. The European Cup, now going away from home, happens every second week. So in terms of not knowing people, I would say that's probably a little bit of a myth. But knowing the great characters that are playing in other countries and other teams is what the Lions is all about. And from our point of view, going on that tour with Andy Powell, just there was every day there was a moment of brilliance, of lightheartedness, and he was the real character that everyone centred around for good moments throughout the day. And it is crucial because you spend a lot of time in your bus, be it going from to and back from training, and they're important that you kind of go hard at training and then you have a bit of a crack on the bus back to the hotel, and it becomes a bit of a monotonous routine. But if you have people like that, himself bouncing off Mike Phillips and bouncing off the other Welsh guys, and then Paul O'Connell throws in an old dirty dig, it just becomes a really enjoyable bus trip. So Fez and myself would be well aware that it's kind of easy know within kind of 12 hours who you're kind of going to not hang around, but who's going to be going to provide the bright moments. And it was just never a dull moment with Andy.
Yeah, he was such a good lad, and playing some good rugby back then. He sort of went off the ball towards the latter of his career, but a guy who had more fake tan in his wash bag than my missus does in the house. But, you know, like, you'd finish a weight session and he was just standing there and he goes, "Oh, bud, you're looking massive, bud. You're looking massive. Look at the size of you, bud." And he just, like, he was full of confidence, and anytime you trained with him, he was energetic and brought a lot of life. And I think somebody who missed the tour in 2009 was Alan Quinlan. You know, yeah. Obviously, you know, it didn't work out the way he would have wanted. But, you know, Quinny would probably say this himself, he wasn't going to be a test starter in South Africa that year, but he would have brought a lot to the tour, and it's important to have characters on the tour. And Quinny would have been the type of guy who would have been running the show on the bus and taking the mickey out of lads and bringing a great atmosphere. So it's important to have those guys. And I know James Haskell, his name was banded about before this Lions tour, because he could be one of those guys that brings a lot of energy and a lot of crack to the tour. He hasn't made the cut, but there's definitely a place for Andy Powell on Lions tours, that's for sure.
Rog, James Haskell.
I've never met him, so I think that's the value of being a player and actually knowing the guys inside out, because your character is going to be tested. beyond anywhere else in the world this summer, because it's not like they're going to Australia or South Africa. This is New Zealand, where they are incredibly passionate, beyond passionate, for their rugby. What they'll tourists will forget is that they're going from summer here, where it gets dark at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night, to getting dark at 4:30 and it'll be raining most of the time. That's our memories of going to New Zealand in June. It's been a hard 3 weeks. This is that multiplied by 10 at least. But it is essential that, I mean, there was a thing in Munster we had, it's what you do for the other 22 hours when you're not training. And they're crucial in terms of gelling the team together and people playing for each other. And it's only essentially the players who'll be able to answer that, because they will have a pattern, they will have a system, they will have a game plan, but rugby's about digging in for each other and how much it really means to you, and that's the biggest challenge facing these guys.
And I think as well, Rog, is like, you can get burnout very, very quickly on a tour, and it's really important that you also enjoy it. And if the guys go down there and their main focus is just to go out every single day in training and just this win, and think about nothing else, when it comes to the test series, the lads will be like getting fed up. And you know, we've seen in the World Cup with Ireland, like, you know, just the constant pressure, and it told on Ireland's display in the quarterfinal. It's just, you need to be able to relax, you need to have team days out, you need to have a bit of fun and get away from the game as well, because yes, essentially you're there to win a Lions series, but geez, no man can go anywhere and be stuck in the same place, hotel life, for 6, 7, 8 weeks, whatever it may be, and get results. You need to have an enjoyment factor involved in it as well.
Was there a big night out like in 09, like, where everybody just kind of free bar tab, don't worry about that, lads, or anything just to blow off a bit of steam?
Yeah, there was before
every
we went
night.
To the tour. But I think every year that gets more and more important. Fez's point is really interesting, because you can become consumed by it, and you will be consumed in New Zealand, because there aren't many outs, and that'll be a really interesting challenge for the Lions management team to see, can they provide that distraction, because you have a lot of players there on paper that look like very serious pros, but as you say, sometimes the very serious pros, if they're all very serious together, where's their outlet? Mm-hmm. So it makes makes for a really good point.
And the contrast between this tour in New Zealand and Australia, for example, last time around, I mean, people who haven't been to Australia don't realise how far down the pecking order rugby union is. Mm-hmm. Like, even in the newspaper media coverage, it wasn't a big thing down there. Like, not compared to the coverage it'll get in New Zealand.
Oh no, they will be completely, I think, blown away by it. I think the one thing the Kiwis do well, sorry, they do many things well, is but they play the game exceptionally well. Their supporters are so in tune with it, and they just produce rugby players upon rugby players that are better than the previous generation. You look at the form of the Barretts, for example, at the minute. Bowden has gone to a whole new level. His younger brother has the capacity to go to that level.
Yeah, they've perfected cloning now as well. Yeah.
And the White Locks, the Barretts,
you can. You can laugh at that, but it's when you're actually sitting down and watching it, it's not once off on a Saturday morning. It's every time you watch Super Rugby. So that's just as an example of the talent that they'll be facing. And I think what separates them too from South Africa and Australia is how mentally strong they are, and their just belief in each other. So it's a big challenge, but as Fez says, you've got to be excited about it and the opportunity to do something that no one else has done. And I think that probably is crucial in terms of how they go about enjoying it and making it something they really want to achieve, as opposed to we've got to win our first game or second game. I don't think that's the approach.
So the enjoyment factor, I mean, I suppose that starts for a player when you're named. So Fez, 2009, where were you when you knew you were a Lion?
Yeah, and everybody thinks that some of the lads know, and I know there was, you know, rumours before the Lions squad was announced yesterday about guys that were potentially going to be involved, and none of the rumours actually came out that were true. So for me, it was finding out on Sky Sports. I was out on the pitch, and Johnny Davis, the strength and conditioning coach at Ulster, came out, and it was a beautiful day outside, and I was just walking about the pitch kicking a ball, There's a couple of lads outside, and he came out and he just gave me a thumbs up and gave me a high five, and that was it. But you know, there was other lads in the Ulster dressing room there, like Rory Best, who didn't get selected. So I wasn't one guy who was just going to go in and start running around shouting and cheering and, you know, this is brilliant. But there's guys there that missed out as well that played with me for Ulster and Ireland. So I just, you know, had a smile on my face, and of course, within 10 minutes, you're standing in front of a camera with a Lions jersey on, and you're being asked, what, you know, what the crack is, and it was a brilliant, proud moment. Just a pity I couldn't go on and try and earn a few more caps, but that's the way it goes. It's definitely for me, it's been the pinnacle of my career. I know we chatted about it last night, but for me to get selected on a British and Irish Lions tour was definitely the best, and I was playing the best rugby of my career as well at the time before I got injured. So I think playing my best rugby at the pinnacle, playing for the best team, it was, you know, right up there with anything I achieved in my career. And it's just a great team to be involved in. You know, the lads have to enjoy it, and I'm sure they will, and hopefully they do go on and achieve something spectacular that we're all hoping.
2001, first time you get the Lions call up.
Yeah, it was. I was a bolter, no doubt about it. I played a good Six Nations, but did I think it would be good enough to get ahead of Gregor Townsend? No. But you get in, and I got a call from Don Lennon, because he was the manager at the time, the night before, and it was at around 11:15 at night, and the squad was being announced the next day. So I was up in Jessica's house, so I just immediately got into the car and drove over to my parents' house and just started knocking on the window, and I didn't know what was going on, but that's how much it meant.
Yeah.
Because that was in 2001, it was, you know, I mean, times have changed, technology has changed, but it was, I was supposed to be ringing someone at 11:15 on a mobile. It was a little bit strange even back then, because it was late and you kind of respected the values that anything after 6 o'clock was probably out of.
Six for you, is it?
Yeah. So it was massive news. As Fez says, I think it's all well and good now because of, thankfully, the good careers we've had. But at that stage, for me, it was dream, because you dream about playing for Ireland, you dream about going playing for the Lions, and to achieve that and to know you're going. And I think, as you say, it was like me going into the Munster dressing room at the start. There was legends of the game. It was same with the Lions dressing room. There was Martin Johnson, Delalio, Dawson, all the English team that went on to win the World Cup in 2003. And it was such an eye opener, that first tour. It was just it was so good, so good.
I was just going to say, do you have to kind of feel then for the likes of Dunica Ryan and Keith Earls then, who kind of, they would have been reported as like, these guys are in the squad, and then not to be in the squad as well, is that?
Pat, I think it's absolute mental torture, I do, and I think that's the key point coming out of the last few days. I think it's horrendously difficult, because if you're a competitor, and Fez knows this, you want to go on this. Being on the Irish team isn't good enough at this stage, because you want to be the best in Europe. You want to be the best in the world. And if a fella says that they're not thinking about it, it's not true.
Yeah.
How can you not think about it? Because you want to, you know what I mean? For me, all through my career, it was kind of trying to get to the level of Carter, getting, you know what I mean? There was years you felt I was getting beyond Wilkinson, and then he had the better of me, but I felt like I was performing. That's all you ask for, to give yourself a shot getting in the test team. And when you do that, you sleep well at night. But the guys that, you know what I mean, from a completely selfish point of view, Earl, Z and Zeebs, who've been on tours before, I think they probably would have hoped to get on again. And, you know, they don't know. I wouldn't think that their name isn't going to be named out. And you just look at the clip, I think, last night of Lee Halfpenny, and what it meant to him. And he'd been on one before, because I'd say he was really touch and go. But it opens a new debate about what his role is going to be on the tour. And
do you reckon that video had it went up if he didn't get selected?
Yeah, no, it's always
someone popping a streamer in the background. Like,
yeah, and also poses the question, if they're recording, do they know what the outcome is going to be? Like, who's having this? Wouldn't you love if his name wasn't named out and it was like everyone abusing Gats? Is there, my boy Lee has done it all his life? You know, but like, it's those guys that you feel sorry for, but I think to give them a bit of comfort, you have to remember that's the opinion of one coach and this management team. And I think if anyone else was picking it, there'd be different So you'd hope it won't affect their confidence and they won't get down on themselves and they'll continue to aspire to get on the tour. But if it is you, that person, and I didn't have that feeling, because in 2013 even the competitor inside you, Fez, you're subbing for Ireland, you're thinking maybe they might bring a bit of experience. That's how wild your mind gets carried away, because you still think you've done it in three tours and you're kind of going, as an outside shot, yeah, I could offer something in the last 20 minutes. But the day you stop thinking like that, the day you're finished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's 41 men named on this, which was a surprise in itself, I think, up from 37, possibly 38. Biggest surprise name in that?
For me, there isn't really any surprises because they're all such quality players.
Jarrod Payne's
left field, but I called it like Pat. I thought Jarrod Payne would go because he grew up in New Zealand. Yeah. He's played in all those stadiums. He's played against a lot of these guys week in, week out, if only a few years ago. And any time he's got an opportunity with Ireland, he's taken it with both hands. So for me, he was a bit left field, but I think he was in with a shout. I know everybody else thinks that maybe Simon Zeebo or something like that probably deserved it to get in ahead of him. But when it comes to the pack, geez, you just look through the names and it's just quality. And then you look through the names that have missed out and it's quality. So for me, if there had been somebody like, I was maybe expecting a player like, you know, like Wade was selected 4 years ago, and Wade was kind of, you know, out of nowhere. But there's nobody really like that this year, and he's went with a strong, powerful, physical squad of 41 players, and I think that was the biggest shock for me was the size of the squad. I thought it would have been 37, 38 players, but it's New Zealand's a long way away, and if somebody needs to be called out, there's the time difference and everything else. So maybe that a couple of extra players will make a difference if called upon.
Any surprises for you, Rog?
I wouldn't know as much about the back row, but I think potentially with Haskell and Robshaw not getting a sniff, or Jamie Heaslip, Ross Moriarty, obviously, I suppose, had a big season. I wouldn't have known much about him 12 months ago, but you look at his performances in the Six Nations and I think he justified it. Because he has big impact and ballast carrying the ball. I think Kyle Sinclair, wouldn't know too much about him. What were the other options? I suppose
Ryan
was talking
maybe.
John Ryan putting in and watching him live in Thomond Park. I think he had a chance, but that's with Irish glasses on, obviously.
There was Nell as well, but he doesn't see. Maybe he had the neck surgery, didn't he? So I don't know whether he's.
I suppose the big, I suppose, interesting point for me is the really successful English team. The spine of that team has been left at home. In terms of Hartley, Launchbury, Robshaw, Haskell, Ford,
Gatland likes the England bench quite a lot.
Exactly. You know, you look, there's 16 from England gone, and a lot of their senior players, leaders, left behind. So it'll make for an interesting dynamic come the November internationals, because you're going to have 16 fellas that were on the Lions tour, a lot of their leaders that'll be driving the meetings that weren't on the Lions tour, and naturally the guys that were on the Lions tour are coming back to listen to the guys that were felt weren't good enough to get picked on a tour, and these are the guys that are driving their ship, which there will be sparks flying, I would think.
Gatland at the launch said that Gary Ringrose was very unlucky to miss out. He seemed to make a point about this. Is that annoying if you're Ringrose, or is that good to hear, look, I'm in that conversation, I could yet get out there?
I think it's extremely annoying for him, because you know, did Bentio dream about playing for the Lions? I wouldn't think so. I didn't think it featured maybe till 12 months ago. Gary Ringrose, I would say, has dreamt about it all his life, and that's, I think, tough when you, he's been exceptional, and I think his acceleration and his growth would be huge on a tour like that. Obviously he's the next man in, considering if that's what Warren said. And hopefully he'll get a chance to show what he can do. But it's when you're yet so close and you don't get it, I think it becomes really, really difficult.
Well, that's even the thing. I kind of think that I always thought Ringrose was going to make it because this guy might just go off the charts in the next couple of years and you've left him behind. Like, so I always thought it was the potential that you're buying into as well. And then the likes of like Delalio and O'Driscoll would have been talking him up, and maybe the likes of O'Driscoll would have Gatland's ear. They've had a few conversations as well. Like, but
I don't think so, Pat.
there was maybe you should say he had his ear.
There was a look between Raj and Fez as soon as you said that.
Jonathan Davies might have his ear.
Ringrose is a great player, but like Raj mentioned last night that when he first went on tour and Johnny Wilkinson, he was like his understudy, and he was getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning, kicking at lunchtime, kicking after training, you know, absolutely busted at night time. You know, how much would Ringrose learn from playing with the experienced players and training with the experienced players and getting exceptional coaching day in, day out? I think an awful lot. So I'd agree with Rog. I wouldn't be happy either if it was him, and you always want to strive to reach your potential and play for the best team about. So yeah, it's disappointing for him, but he's got a lot of time in his hands, and he just needs to keep himself fresh and fit in the next couple of weeks, and you know, hopefully he gets himself out there.
Ian Henderson made it.
Yeah, he did.
He wasn't in everyone's squads coming in, particularly with someone like Itoje already there, who can obviously cover lock and back row. Ian Henderson, when fit, we know is a monster.
Yeah.
What's the potential for Henderson on this tour?
I think it's huge, but it's interesting. Like, Itoje played six for the whole Six Nations, and Ian Henderson's played six for every game he's played for Ulster. But yet they're both named the second rows in the Lions tour. So it's for me, Hendy was thereabouts, and I couldn't say that he was a bolter and he was 100% going to get selected. And the last couple of weeks, he played a lot better against Munster there down in Thomond Park. And I think if there was a decision to be made on that, then that game might have helped them. Get into Warren Gatland's into his squad. But there's no doubt he's a great talent. He's a big man, he's a powerful man, and hopefully we get the best out of him in this Lions tour, because I think his potential is great. I think he's got so much more to offer, and I think that's the way Warren Gatland feels about him also. So yeah, he's do you know what, he's a really good guy, very smart, intelligent guy, and he'll add a lot to the squad, and again come back a much better player.
Yeah, I think he has a bit to go to get to the... I wouldn't agree with that he's a monster. I don't see that in his performances yet, because for me, he seems like a clean pro. The monsters for me are the Leamys, the Ferrises, the Quinlans, Sean O'Briens in the back row. I don't think he has got to that stage yet.
What do you think he needs to add?
I think he needs to add dog, and that's a simple way of saying... Like, I look at moments from Leamy's career, Sean O'Brien's career, Fez's career, Quinny's career... you know, Fez picking up Guinea in Eden Park and literally driving him 15 yards down the pitch, but he didn't place him on the ground. You can be sure he walked all over him when he dumped him. I think the animal in Henderson has yet to come out. You'd love to kind of be able to play behind him with a baseball bat and hammer him, so he's really on edge all the time. And I think that'll bring his game to a whole new level when he has that, when he's on edge. And you just love sometimes that he kind of just lost it, because as Fez says, the days of talking about potential are over. He needs to kick on to a new level, because I think physically, even when we were training, he was a lot on the when I was there, he was on the B team a lot. But like, if you were looking to kind of mess up the A team training at times, you kind of have a look where it would be Sean Cronin, myself, Henderson were kind of the fellas you'd be hoping to kind of create a play that they could get the ball in their hands, because they had the potential to rip open defences. But yeah, I just think when he gets that hard edge and when he's angry, I think he'd be very, very hard to live with in terms of world rugby.
So we need someone to poke Henderson with a stick, just get him annoyed, and then watch out New Zealand scrum halves.
Well, I'd say we'll just...
he'll be playing in the second row though.
The squad, the makeup of the squad, so we know it's a big squad, but some of the names that are in there, does it tell us something about the way they're going to play? Last week, Rog, I think you mentioned that if Halfmoney is actually in the squad, that tells us something.
Well, that was my opinion, yeah. I felt like obviously people won't forget how he kicked against Australia in a really high pressurised test series. He was impeccable, and I think he's got the nod in that, because I would say his playing performances for Toulon and his kicking performances for Toulon and Wales are not where they were.
They're still very good, but they're not halfpenny of 4 years ago, who was...
Stats are dangerous too in terms of watching the stats. I think in some of the kicks he's missed, you'd expect Lee Halfpenny to kick.
Yeah.
Because I watch him closely, and I think... But it could be, and I saw Warren comment on it last night, it could be a big point of difference for the Lions. They feel that they have better goal kickers going into this test, and they probably have better goal kickers.
Yeah, they're openly talking about that, yeah.
Like, if you look at Halfpenny, Farrell, Bigger, Sexton, four of them, I would say, obviously, Farrell, Halfpenny, and Johnny, I think, are better kickers than Bigger. Bigger obviously wouldn't have as many miles on the clock because Halfpenny kicks for Wales, but when he's had the opportunities for Ospreys, he's delivered. But then recently against Leinster to win the game, he misses a kick from 30 yards in front. You can't do that.
Rods, do you need more than a goal kicker to beat New Zealand? Like, do you need guys to be coming in? Like, when was the last time you seen Halfpenny make a searing bust? You know, a massive line break.
I would agree with you. I thought that. I didn't think he'd make the squad, and I thought if he's gone, it means for me, if I was to put myself in the management shoes, I think he's starting the first test at the minute, because I think if you have him, as you said, you have him as on the pitch literally to kick the points, because he's a machine to kick points. But I agree with you. I like the idea of just thinking about last night. I think Liam Williams has really performed for Wales against the All Blacks at 15. And I think he's an exceptional player. Hogg will be there, but you know yourself, between he's going to be tested defensively like he's never been tested before.
But the style of play, so you've got some of the guys have been picked, the centres especially, Ben Teo is there, Mariarty and the forwards we already talked about. Do we get the impression that does this confirm the Warren Ball theory of this is how he thinks we're going to beat the All Blacks, which is you pick it up around the corner, you smash them in the fence, and you sit back, and if Lee Halfpenny's there, you pick up the penalties?
I think the game has changed, and Fez is right. I think that policy is finished, because nowadays it's all about trying to, I think, put the team with the ball under immense pressure, so that you get the ball back in a counter-attack situation, because that gives you the greatest opportunity to score tries from, because you're able to manipulate the defence without thinking. Nowadays, if you're trying to score off scrum or line out against the All Blacks, I think that's a really difficult task, because their defence is set and they've repped this so many times. Nowadays in rugby, the opportunities come from an unexpected knock on and unstructured attack. So I don't think anything has changed in the fact that Warren has always put a big emphasis on size and strength, and he's picked players like that. I think the Teo is, I think the one image that sticks in my head was the when he changed the game against Scotland, was it again, coming off
Wales?
The bench, Wales
he came off the bench
and France, yeah, he got a try against France too,
so he has that, and he's he has that impact. But it'll be interesting to see how they envisage dismantling the New Zealand team.
If you look, I suppose from my point of view, it's an interesting point. You pick your bench, you know, if you're going to end a first test, and you have somebody like Moriarty, Henderson, Sinclair, Teo on your bench, you're bringing those four or five lads on to make an freaking serious impact, that are going to go out and physically try and dominate their opposite number. And I think Warren Gatland has that in his mind, or the coaching staff have that in their mind, that when the going gets tough at 55, 60 minutes, you're going to have guys that know they're playing well and know they're physically capable of mixing it with the New Zealanders. And I think it's going to be very interesting, the bench that he picks going into the first test, to see if they can try and close it out. But it's interesting. Like, but there's some serious power in the 40-man squad that's going.
Is that good news then for like the likes of Rory Best then? Because Jamie George is seen as that kind of finisher as well, that everybody's calling him, that impact player. And then the idea of keeping that Irish front row together then as well, is that, do you reckon that's good news for Best, that, you know, George might be even looked at more so as a kind of a closer than a guy who started a game?
Yeah, I think there will be big emphasis. Rory has earned the right to be a senior leader even with the Lions, and I think ever since the last tour, I think he took the lessons on board that that performance against the Brumbies wasn't good enough and it shattered him, yet he looked himself in the mirror and he's become a completely transformed player. I think mentally he's left that way behind him. You look at him for Ireland now, he's very secure, but I think what's going to be crucial is going to have a scrummaging hooker, and Bestie loves a one-on-one challenge in terms of that. I think he prides himself on being an old-school hooker and getting his basics right, delivering at line-out and delivering at scrum. And I think it's only when you play the game, the psychological impact of having a solid scrum or winning that, what it does to your team. If you're conceding scrum, even two or three penalties at scrum time, the pack become demoralised in front of your eyes. It's incredible when you're the number 10 and you can just see the flow of energy in front of you, and even if it's 55-45, it's a massive advantage to the team that gets that the benefit. And I think Bestie will be looking at driving standards every day and driving the team in terms of I would probably think at the minute that they're looking at him to start.
Yeah,
don't forget about Ken Owens in that conversation.
Well, I think also about Bestie is, like, he's selected on this tour. 4 years ago he wasn't initially selected. And, you know, going, then getting the call up, and then you're getting in there, and mentally, you know, Rory was maybe thinking that he was fourth choice like 4 years ago, where now he's selected, he's on the tour. Like, his priority now is to start the first test and prove that he deserves that spot.
It's a different mindset.
Yeah, it's a completely different mindset. And he was handed the captain's armband as well, you know, 4 years for that game that was a nightmare. For me, it'll be a completely different approach for Rory.
So, captain's armband, this Lions tour, same as last Lions tour, Sam Warburton. What is it that Gatland season Sam Warburton that means he's the right man for the job?
I have no idea. I don't know Sam Warburton that well. I've never been involved in a team with him. I've played against him a few times, but look, he's a great player, and he's achieved a lot of success with Wales. So, and he won in Australia 4 years ago. So, for me, was he the man for the job? I honestly don't know. I probably would have went with Alan Wynne-Jones. Just the change in leadership and captaincy within the Welsh team, you know, was handed to Alan Wynne. Was that to take a little bit of pressure off? Of Sam Warburton coming into the Lions tour? I'm not so sure, but to answer your question, I've no idea what type of fella Sam is and how good his leadership qualities are.
I would agree with Fez. I've never been in his company, so I can't offer an accurate verdict on it. I think to get the honour of captain in the 2013 and 2017 team is incredible, and for him he should be unbelievably proud, because it's only when you think about Martin Johnson, O'Driscoll, O'Connell, that's the level. And I got to know those three guys very well, and the role they have is crucial, incredibly crucial. And those three guys that I went on tour with were inspirational. And I think you got to play for your captain. It's the crucial thing. And the captain, I can remember, you know, I mean, especially Paul and South Africa, people were gobsmacked about how inspirational he was. Martin Williams, a guy who I'd really respect in world rugby in terms of what he's achieved and his opinions, and he's, I think, very calculated. He said he was the best captain he played under. And for a Welsh guy, Martin Williams at that stage would have had 70 plus caps under great leaders at both Cardiff and Wales, and for him to say that about Paul just stuck in my head. And the guys were literally, if Paul said jump, they were kind of how high? Because there is still a role for that in the modern game. I think it's so important. You got to perform with your performances and your actions, but there's nothing like a few stirring words either.
Williams was actually speaking about Warburton there, like on the 2013 tour, during giving a team talk, and he actually turned around and he had to get sick during the team talk before they went out for one of the games, like, because he was that pent up and that built up, but he still went out and had a great game as well. But I suppose you lads probably know there's probably been people getting sick in team talks a few times in the past.
It happens all the time, you know. I think it's people, I suppose, on the outside don't understand the stress involved in the build up to a game, especially those high pressurised game. But I think
Anyone stand out?
Well, yeah, John Hayes was puked over 100 times before every game. You know what I mean? I think
we're going down a road here that I'm not comfortable with.
Against who was it to be? Tonga, the USA. Hayes didn't have a puke. Every other nation he did.
Oh, geez, now we're just going to annoy people. Right. We'll leave it there for the Lions talk. Up next, we will have our preview of Munster Saracens and Leinster Claremont in the Champions Cup semi-finals.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing really. Remember Raj Kev in the Killiney, he used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
We're back on the Hard Yards. It's a huge weekend in the Champions Cup. Munster and Leinster both vying for a place in the final, but they both face very, very tough tasks. Firstly, one little thing we'll go back to, Stephen. You said that when the players who haven't got selected for the Lions, there's a bit of a different mindset there. So that might be the case in Munster, the couple of players in Leinster. Right. How do you deal with that hangover, integrating those players, making sure that it doesn't get involved in the preparation for what is an absolutely crucial, it's the biggest weekend of the season so far?
Yeah, of course it is, but you know, the lads are going to be disappointed, if that's a given, but at the same time they're professional, they're going to get stuck back into training, and when it comes to semi-final time with your club or province, you know, you want to put in your best performances and you want to try and win something for your club, and that's very important also. So the likes of Simon Zeebo, Cian Healy, and Keith Earls, or whoever else that didn't, Guy Ringrose that didn't get selected, they'll be doing their very, very best to try and win something for Leinster and Munster. But it's going to be difficult. They're facing two very, very good sides. But I wouldn't say there's going to be a hangover just yet. And they'll be putting in big performances and making sure that if there is an injury or there is somebody that pulls out, that they're definitely next in line.
Right, from the coaching point of view, is this something you can channel?
Yeah, there's two things. I think that the team is always bigger than the individual, and I think not alone will they be inspired to play for their local team at the weekend. I think it gives them an opportunity to go out and show them that they've made a mistake in leaving them behind, and that has to be motivational for them. I think it gives them... they should be licking their lips and hopefully going out there and getting the performance for their team that gets them to European final. Imagine Munster's situation. This time last year, there was talk about them not making the European Cup. So the transformation they had has been incredible. They probably had, three players that I think have legitimate causes to be disappointed in terms of Donegal Ryan, Earlsey and Zeebs. But for them, the best thing for them to do is to make sure that Munster win it the weekend. They have added motivation, I feel, as opposed to, you would hope, with the experience they've earned and the dressing rooms they've been in, that they wouldn't look upon it as a slight on them for not getting picked, and they wouldn't question their potential or their capacity to perform. So I think it's a massive weekend. As it is, I don't think, as Fez said, I think the first one or two training sessions will be difficult, and after that, that's the great thing about getting the endorphin release, you move on to something next, the next challenge. And if you're not inspired to play in front of a packed Aviva, or in a buzzing Lyon stadium at the weekend, there's something wrong with you.
So Saturday afternoon, importantly for the TV watchers, if you're not in the ground, it's on BT, the Munster Saracens match, 3:15 p.m. I say that because people always get in and they switch on Sky and it's not going to be there, but that's the deal we have. It's a big game, obviously. Saracens have 6 Lions, which is incredible. All, I think, below the age of 27, which is remarkable for any team. They destroyed Glasgow. Munster, we've gone through the type of players they have, obviously. Someone I'd throw into the mix who might yet get out to the Lions tour, someone like John Ryan. But how do Munster set themselves up to beat this Saracens team who destroyed a very, very good Glasgow side in the quarters?
Yeah, Munster, I think they have the ingredients. I think I wouldn't underestimate the role the support will play. For me, it's a little bit of a reminder of England coming to the Aviva to play Ireland. I didn't give England any chance, and I think that's the way it worked out. I think Saracens are further down the road in their development, their capacity to handle an extreme crowd in terms of what they will see on Saturday. For me, they are the best team in Europe, and they have been consistently, because they have capacity to play for each other and to get over the winning line when everything is against them, even last weekend against Northampton.
Yeah.
So they play a really, really high pressurised game, and they force teams to do things that they haven't planned to do during the week. So Wiggles will kick it long and hard. They'll come up with a big defensive line. Etojo will try and get on the poach, and penalties in front of the post, 3-6-9 by Farrell, then they'll score one or two tries. It's up to Munster, obviously, to win the kick tennis, I think.
I totally agree with you, Rod. So watching them against Glasgow and just seeing that they didn't contest the breakdown at all straight away, and there's just this black wall. And when you get Finn Russell gets the ball and he's looking up, and guys are just flying out of the line and absolutely smashing the Glasgow lads. It was like, how do you actually get in behind this team and get on the front foot? You know, is it a case of picking and going and using them all to get gain territory and win cheap penalties? Or, you know, do you do what every other team does and play into Saracens' hands, because that's what they keep inviting you to do, is play a bit of rugby? And they don't start contesting the ball until they're really under pressure.
No, I agree. And the one area of frustration, because we played them in the European Cup final, but they were a far better team on that day, but they put 14 in the front line. So what does that mean? That means that they have one fella covering 40 metres of space here, 40 metres of space. So if you can kind of create an attack kicking game, I feel you could get joy out of that. But A, puts big responsibility on your kick accuracy, and B, your willingness to win the ball. Because as you know, Fez, every one of those situations you can't train for, because A, you can either knock yourself out, B, you can knock out the fella you're jumping against, or C, you can fall and essentially break your leg. And that's the extreme level you need to go to try and get the ball. But I think there are opportunities when they stack the front line like that and they put massive pressure on the 10 and the first and second receiver. You know yourself, many time hunting me down in training, that what do I want all day? Time on the ball. If I have time on the ball, I can pick my option. If you have four black jerseys coming at you, it's really, really difficult, because what happens, you kind of get a little bit dazed by it, your passing line is blocked, and as you say, then you try and come up with the magic play doesn't work.
It's kind of like you get a one out runner and you maybe lose a yard, and then the out half would take the ball, and because he's under so much pressure, he's still going backwards. But so the next time he gets the ball, he decides to go with the kick option, but he's already retreated 5 yards and he's under more pressure.
He's not kicking on his terms.
Yeah, and it's just so difficult. I think you just got to really take them on physically and try and dominate them physically. And do Munster have that strength to take Saracens on physically? I don't think they do. However, you talk about Saracens closing out a game against Northampton, like Munster were very, very, very average against Ulster, and they still won. Like, Ulster were the better team on the day, they just had more unforced errors. But Ulster should have closed that game out, and they didn't, and Munster turned it around and somehow get over the line. And is it because they were playing at home with their supporters there cheering them on to make sure they wanted to send them home happy? Maybe. So that, again, I agree with Rog, could be a huge factor come Saturday.
So let's knit back to the decision making bit of this, because without Conor Murray there, who is a person who's very good at creating those attacking kick situations, there's a lot of pressure on Blaine Dahl. He is playing well, but that's a lot of pressure. This is a big game for him.
Yeah, he's playing great, I think. I think he's been the key man. I think he's given Munster huge belief. I think their forwards believe in their number 10 to get them over the line. And maybe subconsciously before that, they didn't feel that for the previous 2 years. And I think for a pack to know that they have a man that can deliver behind them, I think gives them added confidence. So I think he's getting the decisions right about kicking to the corner, whether they're going for driving maul, whether to take 3 points. And what's really exciting about Munster is the choice they have behind the scrum. I think for years there was always gone good competition, but I think the competition now has gone to a different level because the back three, there's a lot of good players, a lot of players in form between O'Mahony, Zeebo, Earls,
Sweetenham as well.
Sweetenham is a star player, and Conway.
Yeah. Mm.
And you look at Saïli,
Scannell,
Tote and Scannell in midfield, you know, so there's it makes for juicy training sessions, which always increases your opportunities at the weekend if you have fellas looking to rip the head off each other in training.
So then we move to France on Sunday. It's a 4 p.m. local but 3 p.m. Irish time kickoff, which is important. Clermont hosting. What should
It's not Clermont hosting.
Clermont home country advantage.
Yes, and an hour down the road. Yeah. And it's in a big Clermont stronghold. So all the locals will be rooting for Clermont. And I think Clermont are extremely up for this one. And
well, they'd want to be, really, wouldn't they?
Of course. You know, I think... but for me, I think it'll come down to discipline and who's going to give away cheap penalties. And I think Clermont have the capacity to implode more than Leinster do.
Yeah, from your position, again, you probably have a different view from being on the ground in France as opposed to seeing the odd game here, which a lot of Leinster fans might do with Clermont. What would you be looking for in Clermont's style of play that Leinster should be really targeting? Like, is it simply a discipline thing, an all-round thing, or is there something else that Leinster can get at?
See, that's a difficult one because I think Leinster's greatest challenge is going to be stopping Clermont's momentum.
Yeah.
Because you look about how they start games and the plays they have, their back play is very good, and there's an awful lot of thought goes into how they create their players because they have excellent options, not alone with Lamara, but then they can go to Stretla, Bendeman. And these guys with the ball are deadly dangerous, and I think Vahamahina, if he gets on their front foot and they play offload, but they have very good shape. You know, you look at the game against Ulster, it was bizarre when Clermont were at home. They absolutely blew them out of the water for the first 30-40 minutes, and then Ulster, if Paddy Jackson had converted, it became a one score game.
Yeah.
And you kind of thought all the momentum with Ulster. The key against Clermont is hang in there.
Yeah.
Because the tide will turn. You got to hang in there and you're going to be on the ropes. I can remember for at times we were completely on the ropes over the years. But the key for them is that they cannot sustain it. And then after 50, 60 minutes, there'll be a momentum shift. And then Leinster will back their fitness because these guys will be fitter than Clermont.
Well, happened in the quarterfinal with Toulon match. Toulon were hanging in again and again and again, and then that momentum that you talk about, wave after wave of Clermont attack, just pummeling
them. I think as well, it's... Yeah, you want to stop their momentum, but how do you do that? When you're given the opportunity, you want to hang on to the ball. You just don't want to cheaply turn it over again and give them the back. So when they do seem to be getting a bit of momentum and you do get the ball, it's... You got to build multi-phase and you got to hold on to it and you got to turn the pressure back onto them. And to get them guys doubting themselves, geez, we are in for a hard day here, instead of just cheaply giving the ball back to them, a poor kick, a poor cheap penalty, and then next thing there's another 10 or 15 minutes of waves of pressure coming from Clermont. So I think Leinster really got to be patient with and without the ball this weekend.
Cian Healy's a bit of a loss, suspended for a couple of weeks after that incident against Connacht. But how do you see these two games going as predictions?
Well, I got my quarter final predictions right.
You
so
did very
get
well.
That in there, fans.
You?
Oh, I got it right, lads. So,
anybody who was betting with Ladbrokes will have won a lot of money.
Exactly. Brian Mystic Fez, how's it going to go?
Yeah. Do you know what? The Irish teams have done really, really well. I don't sit on the fence, so I'm going to say it's going to be a win for Saracens and it's going to be a win for Clermont.
For me, just to finish up with the point, I think you're going to have a really interesting contrast of styles between Leinster, super structured and really backing their game plan, against an instinctive, I would say, game plan by Clermont. They'll have a little bit of structure, they'll have a little bit of shape, but it'll be fascinating to watch For the neutrals, the value in the two approaches, how they work under the extreme pressure of semi-final cup rugby.
So who are you picking?
I think Leinster. I think Leinster will beat them. I think Leinster really? Will beat Claremont. And
and you got to go with Munster then.
I can't call the game in Dublin because I think Saracens, for me, I said whoever beats Saracens lift the cup.
Yeah.
No, what's the spread on the games?
3.5 point favourites. That's Saracens against Munster, and Claremont are 2.5 in France. Okay. But
I think I'm going to just throw in mine because I went against Saracens last time. I'm going to go Munster and Claremont, but I'd be absolutely delighted if it went the other way around.
Next up, we have Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes to talk about the best odds for this weekend's game and perhaps a bit on the Lions tour.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe, backed by Ladbrokes.
We are back and now joined by Hayley O'Connor from Ladbrokes. Hello.
Hi.
We've just had a very good chat about the Lions squad, and I suppose we've got 41 players named. We now know who the captain is, all those things we now know, and we look ahead to the Lions series. So what do Ladbrokes have as the chances of a victory for the Lions?
Well, I mean, obviously there was a one or two kind of things that we didn't predict about the squad. A couple of people left out, but as you said, looking ahead. So basically, for the Lions, New Zealand are 1-5 to win. The Lions are 7-2, and a draw is 33-1. For New Zealand, for the score to be 3-0 to them, it would be even money. 2-1, 7-4. And for the Lions, the British and Irish Lions, to have a clean sweep 3-0, it's 20-1. So that kind of...
There's a chance. but seriously, is that? I mean, they're the perennial favourites for the World Cup. They're the favourites for every match they play, and the All Blacks are nigh on unbeatable at home. Are those odds even generous? Like,
yeah. They were talking. I remember Five Live were talking to Graham Henry last night, and he was like, oh, "It's just the toughest test I'll ever have." And someone's like, "Really?" And he's like, "And he's just like, yeah, really. Like, you know, it's New Zealand in winter, like, you know, and." Up against all the Super Rugby sides as well, so they're going to be absolutely battered. It's going to be front page news over there as well. The whole country is going to turn on them, and I think they actually are kind of generous odds. I might if I had a spare euro I found on the couch, I might throw it on that. But I wouldn't expect to see it back.
We're not going for the 20-1 Lions 3-0
no.
victory. No. Okay. So the Lions. So then we had some big games. I suppose before that, there is an interesting one about the Barretts. We talked about the Barrett family. You know, they are multiplying.
There could be another one now, but even by the time this goes out,
yeah.
I think there's like five brothers and three sisters, and they when his Kevin Barrett, their dad, was having his last match, they said, "What are you going to go do?" And he said, "Oh, I'm going to go and breed some All Blacks," and he definitely has. So we did a special that last week we went up with Jordy Barrett, Bowden's younger brother, to start the first test for the New Zealand for the Lion Tour, and that was 12-1. He's now gone into 8-1 because he wasn't selected for the Under 20s World Cup, which would suggest that he could be playing, and to make the pitch at any time during the tour, it would be he's gone now to 2-1 from 3-1. But St. Bridget's GAA could have something to thank for the Barrett brothers, because they actually came over to Meath for 18 months and got stuck into the local lifestyle, so maybe their time playing GAA has contributed somewhat to their success. But I think you'd be clutching at straws to take any credit.
We'll claim anything at this stage, I think. No, it'd been the bit of skill last week that Jordy Barrett showed on the touchline was, if you haven't seen this, go get ye to YouTube and look it up. It's just an extraordinary bit of skill, but we should be used to that.
What age is
Bowden.
He? 19?
Oh, depressingly young. Okay. Yeah. Okay, let's go on to something more interesting. So the weekend's games, Fez, of course, was interested after his great showing at the quarterfinals when he called him right. He was interested in the spreads. So when I looked at them, it was 3.5% point favourites Saracens in the Munster matches. Is that still the case?
Yeah, yeah. So Saracens are 7-4 on for the match. You can back them -3, as you say. Yeah. Munster 6-4. Actually, they're the exact same odds. Munster and Leinster are 6-4 underdogs this weekend. But I think Munster might be more likely to cause an upset. If you look back, this will be Munster's 12th European Cup semi-final, but Saracens 5th in a row. But actually Munster are leading in terms of the amount of times they've beaten them in clashes. Leinster 6-4, Claremont 4-7. As I mentioned last week, we really need Claremont to win because everything else is a loser in our book. And Leinster, you can back them +3 in the handicap as well.
Yeah, there was. I could just see the Ladbrokes offices being festooned in kind of yellow and blue for the weekend, like everybody cheering on Claremont.
Yeah, and I suppose we'll leave it with this, that Chris Ashton needs one try to become the top try scorer in European Cup history. I'll be really happy about that.
Just another Warren, are you watching T-shirt? Yeah. It'll flash as he swan dives over the line.
He missed out. That 16-1, we priced that right.
Yeah, I think you're pretty right bang on that. Okay, we'll wrap it there. Thank you very much to everyone today. Thank you to Rog. Thank you to Stephen Ferris. Thank you to Hayley O'Connor. Thank you to Pat McCarry. Our producer is Joe Harrington. Shane Dempsey is on sound. The podcast is available on iTunes, Podcast Republic, Stitcher, and every good podcast app. Thank you for listening to The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady, and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.